I'm also going to be on the panel because I do energy work. So you're in my sights, Travis. Why don't we start with you? How did you get involved in doing energy work? What do you do? How were you trained? What do you love about it?
Really, I feel like we're all born as energy healers. And it's something that I've dealt with most of my life, learning what is energy. I am very sensitive, and it wasn't until a couple years ago that I really started to take it serious. So for me, I found Reiki, and Reiki has proven to be the one method that really resonated with me and taught me how to harness my skills.
And could you define Reiki for people who don't know what it is?
Yes, it is a form of energy healing, but it has more of a traditional root in Japan. And it's really more of, it's very spiritual.
It means universal life force energy.
Yes, universal life force energy. And it's inside of us. We all have it. And it's really just using the intention to help it flow.
But Reiki practitioners think that you have to be initiated or attuned by a Reiki master so it turns it on.
Yes, traditionally, yes.
What do you mean traditionally?
That's pretty much what the Reiki tradition is, versus someone who would call themselves an energy healer. So that's more natural to us. It's more innate to us. Reiki is a tradition.
I used to teach energy tools workshops, I call them, in Japan, and part of the workshops would be to give them the Reiki attunement. And I thought, this is such a kick that Reiki started in Japan, it went to the Big Island, it went to the mainland, it went to me, I'm going back to Japan and giving it to people. It was a really nice circle. So how were you initiated, trained in Reiki?
I randomly was Googling forms of energy healing, trying to learn more, and I came across Jane's studio.
Who's sitting right next to me.
Here I am.
And she's been the most wonderful master teacher. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for her.
And what do you learn besides the hand positions and, let's say, four symbols that you draw and think and say?
So, I mean, outside of the traditional teachings of Reiki, the biggest thing is intuition. It really opens you up. You undergo your own healing. What that does is that opens up your channels, that helps you open up more to receive, and as a result, a lot of your own stuff comes out, a lot of your own opportunities to heal. That's the biggest learning curve, is learning how to be a wounded healer, who you've gone your entire life being attracted to others who need that help, and learning how to direct that back to yourself.
My favorite healing principle is a Native American concept that the healer is a hollow bone, and that you bring the healing energy through you, but it's not your energy. And by the way, I don't like the word healer because it implies that we do something to someone, whereas my thinking is the person heals themselves with your support and extra juice. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that.
Let's meet Jane.
Hello.
Tyler's teacher.
Yes.
What kind of work do you do, energy work do you do? How did you start doing it? How were you trained?
Yes, so goodness gracious, how did I start? You know, I think if you're on the path to work with energy, you realize at some point that you've been on this journey your whole life. And by the time I had gone through an extensive healing period, which was about 13 years of kind of, you know, finding different ways to help me process, to kind of get unstuck the energy that was in my own body through massage, through Reiki, acupuncture, acupressure, yoga, other types of energy healing, lots of reading and books, and really understanding the metaphysical properties of the organs in the body and things like that. I found Reiki, you know, through friends, but I didn't get my own training until 2016. I trained first with my cousin, who actually teaches in Reno, and then I did my Reiki master training in England with William Rand, who is the founder of the International Center for Reiki Training. And we got to do some of our Reiki attunements at Stonehenge, which was an amazing experience. So as soon as I had my first attunement to Reiki, it's kind of like this on switch, you know, kind of like Tyler was saying, you know, it is definitely a method. But when we get an attunement, it's like, oh, it's like turned on to where we can actually flow more of the universal life force energy. So as soon as I got my first attunement, I was like, oh, this is totally home for me. It was very familiar. It totally helped confirm all of my intuitive gifts that I believe we all have, but it does heighten them. And so I knew right away that I wanted to teach, and you know, it just kind of helped me find that path as a teacher, as someone who loves helping people find healing for themselves.
Did you go to England specifically to work with that teacher, or were you already in England?
I did go specifically to take that class. It was kind of like something was calling to me. Oh, I need to go to Stonehenge, and I wanted to take a class from a different teacher. And I've taken, you know, a few different classes. And, you know, I find sometimes, too, you take different classes and you meet different people and you have different experiences. So it just felt totally part of the plan, so to speak, for me to go.
As a footnote, when I was at Stonehenge, I didn't feel much. It mainly partly because it was so touristy and so many people and buses in and out. So I'm curious what kind of feeling you got at Stonehenge.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, when we went, it was kind of the special thing where William Rand had worked out with the people that run Stonehenge that we got to actually go in the inner circle and do the meditation. Since my class, they no longer allow that due to vandalism. So it wasn't like I necessarily was feeling a lot, but actually just being in England felt really magical to me. The English countryside was amazing, and it felt very homey. A lot of it reminded me of the beautiful rolling hills in Butte County with all the oaks. You know, the stones.
A lot bit greener.
But the stones themselves, it's just cool being there. I didn't necessarily feel this magical pulsation. I just wanted to, like, look and just kind of take everything in. So maybe I was feeling a little bit stimulated.
Then how did you come to Chico to teach? Were you already here?
Yes, I've been living in Chico since 2000. And so it just, everything kind of lined up from my first attunement. I had a friend who had an office, who needed people to, you know, rent from, and it just kind of unfolded slowly. It was divinely ordered, as I like to say. It was definitely part of the plan.
Could you say a word about the Wellness Collective that you've organized?
Yes, absolutely. Wellness for Being is a wellness collective that I have been working on organizing since 2017, and really we're just kind of starting to get going. We are just now really starting to become known in the community as a resource for holistic services and wellness. And the website that we have, wellnessforbeing.com, is essentially a listing of all different types of holistic services. Some you've probably heard of, like massage and acupuncture, and maybe some things you haven't heard of, like mediumship and aura reading and things like that. So the idea of this is to help people find what they need, help them find the people that are going to be a good fit for them. So it's all different places. It's different wellness centers. It's specific practitioners at different locations. And then we have a huge calendar of events, of classes, and like, you know, your classes are on there on Wednesday nights at the Shalom Free Clinic. So it's really a resource for the community. And our hopes are to, the bigger vision is that the, you know, Eastern model and the Western model of health are going to begin to marry and come together so that we can embrace the ancient knowledge that mind, body, spirit, it's all one thing, that they work together. So when we have a yoga practice, we're getting a physical workout, but it's affecting our spirit, it's affecting our mind to create balance.
And our meridians and our
chakras. And our chakras and all that stuff. So
how many practitioners do you know offhand are listed on the website?
Approximately 50, I think, at this point. We may have a few more than that. We have some new members that just joined, so that's really exciting. And the idea is that, you know, not one size fits all. You know, my massage therapist may not be the right fit for you, you know, but we're working together in a way to help people find the right fit. And sometimes that might be a trial, you know, a trial period. But we're coming together with this, the idea that unity, we're moving into a time of unity consciousness. And so it's really exciting to be able to offer this to the community.
Well, it's exciting that there's 50 people that you know of that in this town of, 80,000 people or something. That's encouraging.
It is. And, you know, more people are looking for these types of healing modalities. As we're fastly learning that a pill isn't going to fix the root cause. Not saying that all pills are bad. We definitely need them in certain cases, but it's not the whole picture. You know, the holistic model is that wholeness model.
What's interesting to me is how powerful the mind is, and they've done sham surgeries where the person thinks they're being operated on. I think they actually cut, but they don't do anything medically significant, and the person gets better.
So absolutely. I've read those studies. It's the placebo, right? The mind is very, very powerful.
Right. So that's got to be the key to medicine of the future, is incorporating the power of the mind. There's a professor at Harvard named Ted Kapituch, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, who's studying placebo. Finally. Hello. I mean, it's such a huge thing. Why haven't we studied it? I've just been irritated. Oh, it messes up our drug trials. And he found that even if people know it's a placebo, if you tell them this is a sugar pill, it has helped other people get better, they get better. And if you say this is placebo, but it's a big red pill, that's a little more effective than a small white pill. So the mind is incredible, and we can talk more about that.
It is.
Peg, are you part of this collective yet?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I was just thinking. Yeah. I'd like to be.
Yes. Yeah. This is Peggy Bailey. Tell us what you do.
I do readings. I do massage. I am a Reiki person as well. Just kind of a combination, but my work started going back to age 3. My sister was born with cerebral palsy, could only make guttural sounds. So at that age, I could see spirits. She would make a sound, I could see them. They would tell me what she needed. I'd take her to my mother, and I didn't know they were spirits or angels, but they looked normal to me.
And what did they look like?
They always had a human face, and they spoke, and I could hear them and describe them, but the rest of their body was in light, but I never thought that was weird. At three,
yeah.
Yeah, so, and I didn't even know they weren't family or who they were. I didn't question it because I didn't think of it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as growing up, by the age 11, my sister could form words, so I wasn't needed so much for her. But I started realizing that most of my friends thought I was weird and strange. So I shut down for years. Oh. I still heard the guidance. They were always funny, playful, but protective and guiding. And it wasn't until I started doing massage that it opened me back up, but for other people that I barely knew and was massaging. And their guides, loved ones, started coming through during massages, giving me messages for the person on the table. And that started the journey of what I'm doing today, which is private readings, group readings, and working still with massage and Reiki and other healing modalities.
If someone wants to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
My cell phone is okay to give, I guess, which is 530-228-1327. And my email is peggy5695@sbcglobal.net.
Do you remember one of those early messages, what it was? Probably it imprinted on you because it was new and at that time. What was the message?
Well, the one for my sister was always, she would make a sound and they'd say, she wants a bowl of Cheerios, she needs to go to the bathroom. So I would just take her and do whatever. But through the year, the first time it happened during a massage, which was approximately 30 years ago, was second time I'd worked on this man. I was working on his arm, and his mother's face just came in, very sweet, and she said, oh, that's how I used to rub Jimmy's arm when he was a baby.
Aww.
And then she focused like a camera would right on her dress, and I could see the print, the buttons, the color, belt, every detail of that dress. Then she just focused back on her face and smiled and floated away. And that had never happened with somebody I didn't know. So I just intuitively asked, if he's meant to get this message, you have to give me the words. I didn't know how to tell someone. And finished the massage, waited out, and when he came out, out of my mouth, but not out of my brain, came the words, do you believe in angels, or have you had any experience? And he looked at me strange and said, well, yes, as a matter of fact. So I told him that I saw his mother described her. When I described the dress, his eyes got huge. Whoa. And he said that was the dress she was buried in.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I feel her every morning when I'm putting on my shoes, but it's so nice to know she's that close. And I said, yeah, she's right here with you. So that started the journey to really, that was the beginning of working with other people, other than my own guidance and my sister's.
Some people say that we all, each of us has at least one guide, an angelic helper. We've had a guide that's been with us since our inception as spirit. How do you kind of categorize the helpers from the other dimensions?
With each individual reading, it's different.
Oh.
So some guides will be there consecutively with every reading. Other times, a new one will show up, a master guide. But they'll always identify themselves and how long they've been with a person and sort of the background of why they are the guide for that person. So they give you a lot of information.
So it feels like you're hearing it in your inner ear and you're just speaking what you're hearing. You're just...
Yeah, that's the hardest part to describe. I feel like my energy gets always shifted to the left and they just flow through me. And it goes so fast, I don't have time in my human brain to think of. It's just moving. So it's really, they're using me as the vehicle to... It's coming through me, and I know I'm saying these things, but I'm not thinking them to say them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that PhD researchers are working with mediums. University of Arizona, Gary Schwartz, the Wind Bridge Institute, a couple is working with mediums there. Professor Coe in England is doing really large, extensive scales of mediums. And what's interesting is they're accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary Schwartz is working on a soul phone. Have you all heard of that?
Uh-uh.
Okay, he's working on a device where it would communicate at least yes and no responses from entities on the other side. And Harvard PhD, Ivy League, taught at Princeton, so he was a skeptic. He was raised as a skeptic. And then he met his angel, Sophia. And he found that she had more influence on the device in the Faraday cage kind of thing than, say, another entity. So he's working on the soul phone so we can communicate in a more direct way with other.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's cool. I love it. I said, how do you get the university to let you do that? Mm-hmm. And because he gets money for it.
That's wow. So cool.
And he has great credentials, and he's written a lot of books. If people are interested, Gary Schwartz. Also, I just am finishing up a trilogy about visionary scientists and what they tell us about healing and reality and knowing. And Gary Schwartz is one of the people that I interviewed. And if anybody wants to see him, he's on my YouTube channel. And so is Julie Beischel, who's the PhD skeptic. She doesn't really believe in anything spiritual, but she studies mediums because she felt like they need kind of a champion, an intellectual champion.
That's a good idea. Changing times.
Really changing times. The way I got involved in all this is I was teaching at the university where I knew Peggy, and I had a sabbatical, and I said, I want to do more with my spiritual life. And so there was a place called the Chico Psychic Institute, and it was a spin-off of the Berkeley Psychic Institute. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the tools that I use are BPI tools, a lot of visualizations to ground and center and that kind of thing. And so I was there for a year, two nights a week, and then I took Reiki, and I took a year of a Barbara Brennan spin-off from a guy named Michael Manis, and started getting fascinated with the inner senses. It seems to me that for every external sense, we have an inner sense that's so rich. It's like, I love snorkeling because you look at the water and it's just like, meh, flat, and then you put on your snorkel goggles and there's turtles and octopi and schools of fish and big lobster and all kinds of things. And I think the same thing for this kind of energy work is that you learn to tap into your inner senses, which is really exciting. So I want to let listeners know that we're videotaping this, and it will be on my YouTube channel. Just search Gail Kimball. And the next question that I wanted to ask the panel, because it's so pertinent, is what else can we do to strengthen our immune system besides wash our hands and not touch our face? So for me, it's acupressure tapping, like using emotional freedom technique and tap on that. A really simple one is to tap on the thymus, which is mid, where you below your collarbone, and you tap in a circle. We can all do this. My thymus, my immune system is strong. I'm empowered. I love my immune system. It does such a great job. Those killer white T cells are so smart. They find the virus, the bacteria, and chomp it up. And I use essential oils. Some people know about thieves, where supposedly thieves during the bubonic plague in Europe didn't get sick when they robbed bubonic plague victims because they used thieves. So it's cinnamon, lemon, thyme, rosemary, and what have I left out? Oregano. So it's cinnamon, thyme, rosemary, lemon, and one more. But you can just Google thieves recipe and use that. So let's go to you, Travis. What do you use? What else to keep strong immune system in this time of plague?
For me, diet's really big, obviously. Uh-huh. Eating a healthy diet, preferably foods that make your body hum and buzz and gives you life.
Like what?
Vegetables, roots. I love beans. I know not everybody likes beans.
They're good fiber.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good for your digestion.
Food that is alive and can help promote that energy within your own body. But the biggest thing for me is stress management. Mm. There are so many methods to relieve your stress, and it's so easy to go on YouTube and find a relaxing meditation and just lay there in your bed and relax, because that puts your body in that state of healing and it builds your immune system.
Mm-hmm. I have a meditation CD if anybody wants it. And I should say that every Wednesday we do free, I do chakra balancing and reading. Other people do Reiki and Joe Ray, which is similar to Reiki, energy healing, and it's every Wednesday from 5 to 7, drop in, 1010 Mangrove behind Access Dental. So anybody's welcome anytime, and I'll also have some of my books there if people need that. Jane, what do you do for a strong immune system?
Oh, so many things. pretty much everything you guys said. Diet is very important. Essential oils.
Maybe not a lot of dairy and wheat.
Yeah, just, you know, really those things that grow on trees and from the ground are really useful. But laughter is so important. Just, you know, finding things to not stress about and find things to laugh about. In this modern age, it's so easy to just turn on the panic. You know, it's right there. So I take measures not to pay too much attention besides what might feel relevant to me. And right now, you know, to me, it's more important to turn it off and to find things to laugh about. So maybe that's a funny show or hanging out with friends. Just finding that sense of joy, because everything is vibration. So if I'm vibrating at a higher frequency of laughter and joy, my immune system is automatically working better. And I'm not going to be allowing as many of those, you know, bacteria or viruses and things to get stuck in my energy.
I don't know if this is actually true, but there's kind of the apocryphal story of Norman Cousins, who had some, I don't know, immune disorder. I don't know what it was. He got in a hotel room. He rented funny movies and just laughed his way to wellness. Yeah.
I think it was I think maybe he had cancer or something. Was it, or was it an immune deficiency?
It was something.
Yeah.
Chronic.
Yeah, something not good. But yes, laughter is in fact one of the very best medicines.
In terms of Chinese traditional medicine, the explanation is stress robs the spleen, which the spleen meridian is involved in the immune system. And triple warmer meridian is, oh my God, oh no, blah, 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 blah. And so we're too active in our triple warmer, it robs spleen, which robs the immune system. So a really simple exercise is, and we can all do this, you can rub your temples in a circular form, go up over your ears, behind your ears, down along your neck, and grab your shoulders so your elbows hang down. And what that does is rub triple warmer meridian backward, which is called tranquilizes it, it calms it. So that's an easy thing we can do. And breathing calms the long deep breath, exhale, calms the parasympathetic nervous system. Mm-hmm, so we're building a list here.
Yeah, and to add to that, you know, I think we live in a time where we're so connected to everything. Historically, we didn't know what was going on across the world. So we're constantly being bombarded with this information that's putting us into fight or flight mode,
right,
which is automatically stressing us out.
Right.
So I do a little practice in the morning where I do not turn on my phone or I don't look at my phone or anything for at least a half an hour to give myself a chance to wake up in the morning, to not go directly into flight or fight mode as soon as I wake up. And then maybe I get some good food and I put on some essential oils and I'm already kind of, you know, feeling good. My immune system's already working good before I address what's going on in the world.
Speaking of international trauma, you're starting a kind of a conference this weekend. You're organizing it. Is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen?
We're hoping that it happens. Now, the CDC is definitely taking measures to keep us all protected so we're not, you know, spreading germs and stuff like that. And we want to be compliant with those regulations. But we have an open house that is planned for Saturday at the Center for Spiritual Living here in Chico from 10 to 1. And we're hoping that this is still going to happen because this is going to be a really great opportunity for people to, you know, come in, find out what is Reiki, what is mediumship. Maybe they get a mini massage or sound healing. People will be talking about all sorts of different kinds of holistic healing, like float therapy, you know. So we're hoping to have this still happening on Saturday, March 14th.
Just no one hug anyone.
Yes, and you know, you can check our website at wellnessforbeing.com, and we're also on Facebook and Instagram. If this is going to be happening. We'll be meditating on that tonight and just making sure that if it is, you know, the right thing to do, we're going to move forward with it. And if not, then we'll let the public know.
Seems like it would be a powerful place to do a group cleansing.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Empowerment. And
yes.
We don't need this virus here.
Yes.
Peg, do you have suggestions for strengthening our immune system?
Everything that's been listed or talked about. I do a lot of internal listening to my mind, my emotions, my body, spirit. So that helps me know where I'm derailing or staying in balance. And just
so if you know you need to take a nap, you might take
right,
a nap.
Right. And what I keep hearing from spirit, because this is coming up all the time now with people, is to really watch your immune system. Do whatever it needs, the oils. I do a lot of the tinctures that are for the immune system, lemon balm and ashwagandha, and a lot of different ones that boost the immune system as well. And plenty of water, and just not going to fear about it.
Mm-hmm.
Really trying to stay out of that fear zone. And as you said, Jane, the humor.
Yes.
I find, there's, the other big one is gratitude. It just seems like gratitude will pull me right back in balance whenever I feel off.
There's a professor at UC Davis who's done very scientific studies about the impact, the efficacy of gratitude.
Mm.
And keeping a gratitude journal really makes
it's
a difference
powerful.
In students' grades and well-being and that kind of thing. Another thing that I do that's really easy is I use my sleeve to open doors and stuff, so mm-hmm. to minimize what
or
you
the
touch.
Fist, things like that. Elbow.
Yeah. And it seems to me that the silver lining of this epidemic is that Mother Earth is going, whew, I got a break. They're not flying around leaving exhaust and manufacturing and driving and whatever. So someone told me that the pollution in China is way down.
Oh, wow.
Because they're not driving and manufacturing and all that. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good list. Thanks. Travis, could you say a word about mediumship? Because that's also what you do.
Oh, yes. Sorry, my name is Tyler.
Tyler, sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, this is Travis. both T's.
Yes. So for me, it's not really something I've opened myself up to provide to the public, but it is something that I've been exploring within myself. As a small child, I would see spirit, and I did not know how to explain it. I did not know that it was different and weird. Sometimes it was terrifying. Sometimes it was beautiful. And at a certain point, I closed it off. I closed myself off
like
to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of my Reiki journey and part of who I am now as an adult is getting back in touch with that and really embracing spirit and understanding that there really is no separation between the physical, the mind, spirit. That's all one. And opening your eyes to spirit, you see it in so many more ways.
So what kind of messages are you getting?
Often it's primarily it's something that someone really needs to hear about their self-worth. It's really more directed towards the person that I'm sitting for. Maybe something happened to them in their childhood that they're still holding on to and they blocked it out. That might come to the surface. And I might be able to say, oh, it was your aunt who, she had this color hair and you would go to her house every Saturday and do this. She wants you to know this, remember this. That's where your happiness comes from, or really intimate experiences from someone's past that only spirit can validate.
You said that sometimes there were kind of scary beings that you saw, and in this book about visionary scientists, some of the psychoanalysts and therapists discovered in their work with patients that what was causing havoc was negative entities.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we know a lot about them. So what's your understanding of what those negative entities are, where they hang out, and what their intent is?
at the time, I had no idea what they were. I was terrified. All I know is that when I had an encounter with them, I had fear.
Yeah.
I had anxiety, and it was a very chaotic experience. Hindsight, doing research, reading about other people's experiences, it's really no different than that person at the grocery store who might be toxic, or that one friend who brings you down constantly. And it's not unrealistic for there to be entities in spirit that also have that same tendency to bring us down, pull us into that gravitational force of fear and anxiety because they're stuck there. One day I would love to get to that point where I could help them move on and grow and release themselves from that hell that they've caught themselves in.
Yeah, Barbara Stone is a psychologist who works with those kind of entities and extraterrestrials and negative ones and little, like, trolls and all these kind of interesting creatures opened up to her. And what she does in her practice is heals the negative entity that's attached to her patient. So she doesn't say, go, get out of here. She says, well, and she uses acupressure tapping as part of the healing process to lift them to another dimension. Do you want to comment on that, Jane? Have you worked with those kind of guys?
I have in the past, or, you know, it happens. Just like here in what we experience as physical, there's what we consider to be, quote, positive or, quote, negative, right? You know, I like to refer things to as like lower or higher vibrational, you know, things, and that could be emotions, that could be thoughts, that could be food even. But there are entities or souls that may be, you know, a lower vibration, and just like Tyler was saying, it's kind of like almost they're stuck in this vibration of fear, for instance. So sometimes these entities need a little bit of assistance in remembering who they are, and that really is that remembrance of the connection to the source that we're all connected to. So I think sometimes if there's a traumatic death or something, if it's a human, they might have gotten maybe stuck in the in-between from the life that they just left and heading back to that source, which I believe is unconditional love. And I think that's also in many forms. So sometimes, you know, there are spirits that need a little help.
Oh, yeah.
And they do, just like your friend Barbara, you know, they need to be healed. And so it's not necessarily like, you know, you see in the movies like, exorcist,
yeah,
you know,
right.
Blah, blah.
Right.
It's, you know, maybe they're afraid. Maybe they forgot. Maybe they're lost. Maybe they're stuck. And so they just need that love and that guidance to not hang out in that fear state anymore, or harm, or, and I don't mean harm, like they're not gonna like hurt you necessarily, perhaps it's happened, but you know, having a negative, you know, energy next to you is going to kind of bring you down, you know. So
Robert Monroe is a really interesting character, kind of like an Edgar Casey kind of Virginia conservative person who discovered he was astral traveling. And Robert Monroe writes in his books about astral traveling and come, he said, we kind of go to where what our strong belief system is. So if you believe in a Mormon heaven,
yes,
then you'll be
right
in house next to God with your spouse and that kind of thing. But the reason I'm bringing this up is he said he came across addicted spirits that were like entangled in a big ball of like desire. And
mm-hmm.
They weren't free to move on because they were still attached to their addiction,
right,
or whatever it was.
Right.
And so they couldn't see outside of their desire to get help to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Peg, do those kind of spirits that are stuck or need help ever say, Peggy, I think I died, I'm not sure. What, can you help me figure out what's going on?
Not too often. Most of my work is done with the people, the humans here that are stuck, and the guidance that comes through. I mean, I know that exists, but the majority of my work is not about those spirits that are stuck. I've felt them, I've worked with helping them release from homes and on land and stuff that was having a struggle. But I don't have a lot of experience with that because the majority of my work is all about what we're doing here mm-hmm. and how to move forward.
What worked to get them to get unstuck from a house or a piece of land or something?
Usually I would just ask for whatever guidance was there, and it could be in the form of moving through the house with everything open, a candle, a prayer, finding where that energy is stuck, and just asking for divine guidance to help move it out. And I've been on land where nothing would grow. And the force even to get into the front door was so extreme. And once we could connect with why that was, there had been a lot of bloodshed on that land. And the spirits that were there did not want anyone on that land. Mm-hmm. And so there was, and even in Hawaii and with Dolores, going through the Waimea Canyon there, they only wanted spirits that their intention was to do right for the land and for the people there. Mm-hmm. So anybody wanting to come in and make it a theme park was, they said very clearly, we'll either accept you or spit you out. That was their strong message in that way. And
so you walked through Waimea Valley on Oahu and tuned in.
Yes.
There's sacred sites at that are really powerful.
And they were there. All these like native spirits were watching every move we made and telling me what would not work and what they only would accept as far as what they wanted for that sacred land.
That's kind of like Findhorn Garden, where they grew those incredible gardens in the rocky spit in Scotland because they tuned into the devas and they said, oh, grow the cabbage here. And oh, rat deva, could you please go someplace else, or mole, get your mole creatures somewhere else? And they grew incredible things, and Findhorn's still going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the garden, nothing happened. That the people came together with Dolores' help and others, and the theme park never made it. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's so much power from spirit, but it's learning how to connect with them in a positive way that can be helpful to everyone. Mm-hmm. But
what we're seeing, I think, is we're creating a new, which is actually very, very old paradigm understanding, because the dominant paradigm has been everything is only material.
Right.
It's all only our five senses, only chemistry, only the physics that we can see. And so when you die, that's it.
Right.
When you can't get information from any place else. But in this new paradigm that I'm exploring in the trilogy, they say that no, the basis of everything is consciousness or spirit, and then material follows from that. And that means we have access to information and power and understanding that's way beyond just our little five senses.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people in the book is Eben Alexander. You've heard of him? He was a neurosurgeon, a Harvard neurosurgeon, and he had was in coma for, I think, 14 days, and his brain, he said, was pus. And doctors validated, yeah, his brain was pus. And during his coma, he had Robert Monroe-like experiences of traveling to different dimensions and accessing spirit and this feeling of love, and he was guided by his biological sister. He was adopted. He never met her, but she guided him. She had gone to the other side, and she guided him there. And the mediums communicate. So there, it looks like there's really good evidence that spirit continues, which means that there's much more than the material world.
Yes.
So let's say a bit about what you think is going on. Why can we do healing from a distance? Why can we prayer from a distance be efficacious? Who wants to take that?
You're looking at me.
Do you want to do talk and I will, or do you want me to start?
You can go ahead.
Okay, maybe you can chime in and help. Why? Because we are consciousness, and everything is consciousness. This isn't like something new. You know, the time that we're stepping into, this new paradigm, is actually the real paradigm of what actually is. So, you know, I love the work that, like, Deepak Chopra does and Joe Dispenza does. They're really, what's happening is they're proving all of these ancient knowings in the texts and the sages and the wise people. They understood that everything is energy, that this material life and existence that we're experiencing is just a part of what existence actually is. So, you know, there's studies that have been done. I love the work that, I'm blanking on her name, The Power of Eight. She wrote those books. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Anyways, I love those books because they've done studies on when people come together with unified intention and they send this intention from their heart center, that massive change occurs. People are having miraculous healings. Peace is happening. We're literally affecting the energetic field with our intention. And so that's going back to how powerful the mind is. Wherever we project our attention and we put intention there, we're affecting change in the entire magnetic field. And so, you know, this is what Jesus was talking about. You know, he wasn't necessarily saying, like, pray to me and I am God. He was saying, hey, when you guys get together and you have an intention and you focus on that, you're going to create change. And so what we're stepping into now as a species is we're starting to understand this. We're starting to be able to measure this. So everything that we do, everything that we think, everything that we say, everything that we put into our bodies is energy. And so we can harness how we want this energy to work by our intention, because that's how energy works, with our intention and attention. And so that's why we can send Reiki from a distance. That's why we can, you know, pray for someone and miraculous things happen. It's the same thing. So.
Mm-hmm. One of the authors in my trilogy is named Roger Nelson, and he was a professor at Princeton, and they had the Princeton Pair Lab, where they have random number generators. Have you heard about these things?
No.
They have machines that just randomly do 0101, 0101. And what they found is if they put humans in front of them, they got a much more coherent, unified output of zeros and ones. And then if they had people that were in love, they would have even more effect if they put them in front of the machines. A guy named Tiller at Stanford did the same kind of work with machines. And then they started putting the rings all around the world, and they mm-hmm. found that big events registered in the random number generators. So a big one was 9/11. And the interesting thing about that is that 3 or 4 hours before the first plane hit, the bell curve started happening.
Interesting.
And that's also another factor, is that time as we know it is not linear. But the fact that you can influence machines is with your thought is truly shows the power of mind over matter. And they also at Pair found if the rings spit out its zeros and ones and you didn't look at the results, you could change them with your intention.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But if you looked at them, you couldn't change it.
Yeah, because our mind gets in the way. I remember the author, it's Lynn McTaggart.
Oh yeah, she's British.
And I love the work she's done because she comes from a very scientific research background, and she's, you know, proving basically that intention and prayer mm-hmm. works. So, yes.
One of my other authors, these guys are so fascinating, I just love them. And a lot of them are on my YouTube channel, so you can see them right now. His name is Garrett Modell, and he's an engineering professor at the University of Colorado. And he's been working with psi-biotics, where you have machines act out your intention. So in the future, if someone is paraplegic or something, they'll be fitted with a way where they just think it and it will happen, and you don't have to have electrodes mm-hmm. in your brain or something. So mm-hmm. you just think walk, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you'll walk.
And figure out how to harness energy that way. That'll be, well, I don't think it's that far reaching. You know, some of the, you know, things that are coming from quantum physics right now are just absolutely amazing. And I think we're mm-hmm. moving into a really exciting time where we're going to be able to understand spirit in a more scientific way.
Oh yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Did you want to add to that, Tyler?
No, I mean, it's this whole conversation inspired me to really want to put the message out that just focus on here, now, mm-hmm. in your heart. Yeah. That's reality. Anything else, time, all these ideas that we have, that's somewhere else, that's in our brain. If you just focus in here, right now, in your heart, this present moment, that's where you're going to experience this world. That's where you're going to see the truth. That's when these beautiful ideas are going to come to you that can actually change the world. And sorry that was out there, but I just really mm-hmm. wanted to like drive that home to people. What we do here, why we're here, is because we've learned how to tune back into the heart. I was a little off subject.
No, it's not off. It's totally valid. For me, I always want to understand why something works, but mm-hmm. you're right, just being in your left brain isn't whole. Mm-hmm. Peggy, anything you want to add to why we can do these things?
Well, just what you said, the more we're present, really mm-hmm. present, in all our bodies, the more of those experiences you're going to have. Mm-hmm. I've had them. Amazing teleporting and things you wouldn't ever even believe you could do. You can't say, oh, I want to do that. But they come when you're really very present.
Tell us about teleporting.
Well, it's happened a couple times. Ooh. But was turning into Butte Creek Canyon. This was a year ago. And stopped at right at Skyway and going to turn right. It was really rainy. I had 2 miles to go, so I was just really present on the road condition and asking for, you know, guidance to get there safely and just being very aware. And I was thinking that, and I was in her driveway without ever driving there. And it shocked me because I didn't know how it was instantaneous. I was there.
Oh.
And I just stood in her driveway like shaking. How did I get here? And when I left, I was back in Skyway at that stop sign without ever driving it. So that is but it has to do with that sense of intention and that present being right with, I can't bring it up and say, do it again, I want to try it again. But it was fascinating. I mean, beyond anything I've ever experienced. Mm-hmm. But
a lot of us have read Autobiography of Yogananda. Mm-hmm. And his gurus all the time are in two places at once,
right.
or moving around. So that's the trouble with the materialist model, is it limits us.
Right.
And we have so much more that we're capable of. That's what's really exciting to me.
I think we're going to have more and more of those experiences.
Oh, yes,
it's
absolutely.
Just right the beginning of knowing that and accepting it and just staying in present to mm-hmm. experience it.
Jane brought up quantum physics, and I think that's what really has opened up the understanding mm-hmm. of the universe is much more than we think it is. By the way, about 25% of Americans don't know that the sun is the center of our solar system. So we have a lot of science education to do.
Education, yeah.
And they think that the world was made in 6 days and that kind of thing. So what quantum physics started in the early 20th century, brilliant young German, Danish scientists. And what they found is that the whole universe is connected. There's an information field that connects everything. So if we take two electrons and they're paired, the physics term is entangled. And if we send one of the pair to another solar system and we change its spin, the other entangled one instantaneously changes in response. And when you think about that, that is really profound. There's no like lag, so there's not like a wave function. I'm changing, so you change. No, it happens instantaneously. So, and it doesn't matter how far. So quantum physics taught us that, and they taught us that how I observe something changes what it's gonna do. So whether it becomes a wave or a particle, it's not going to shift into actuality from potentiality unless it's observed. So the mind has lots of power. And the other thing that goes along with this is that we only know 5% of the universe that's matter, because the rest is dark energy and dark matter that we really don't know what it is. So this says to me that we should be humble. And saying we know so little about what really is. What I'd like to do now is to thank our sponsors. Ask Dr. Gale is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features daily lunch and dinner, including salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, as well as craft beer and eclectic wines. It's open 7 days a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday evenings at 2359 The Esplanade. Find Farm Star Pizza on Facebook and at farmstarpizza.com. Ask Dr. Gale is also brought to you by Digital Path, providing high-speed internet and telephone for homes and businesses. Digital Path services the North State, including rural and hard-to-reach areas, with internet service and coverage. For more information, go to digitalpath.net or phone 800-676-PATH. Ask Dr. Gale is brought to you the second Thursday of each month. Next month, we're going to discuss mental health issues. I'm really interested in discussing narcissism and sociopathy for obvious reasons, but I'm having trouble finding therapists, psychiatrists who are willing to discuss that. So if any listeners has suggestions for who should be on the panel to discuss mental health, that would be great. let's talk about some case studies of really juicy changes that you've seen in your practice. Anybody want to have one pop in their mind?
Do you have one?
It's more of an overall. I mean, there's hundreds of personal ones that are beautiful. But
give us one example that where someone changed because of what they were told by their grandmother or whoever.
Well, I work a lot with parents who have lost their children to suicide or different mental, and to see the one that I'll never forget, because he was an adult child but had a lot of mental health and drug abuse, was an incredible surfer in Santa Cruz, and during the reading, and they didn't know how he had died, and they eventually found his body buried, and in the reading he came through and he was on his surfboard spinning in circles on the water, just beautiful. But I'm going, so I'm telling them what I'm seeing, and anyway we get done and the parents were laughing, smiling. They'd come in really tormented by his death and everything, and then they put on a little video from his service, and that's what he did in the water, was spin on the water on his board. So they knew he was well, he was there, he was laughing, he was giving them what they needed for healing, and just to know I'm here, I'm still still present. And So, I mean, there's many, many of those kind of stories. And when you see, especially the loss of a child and how it can just destroy a family, marriages, everything, to see them all come together and find some joy again.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Be able to give that to a family. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. good. Jane, you got a goodie?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's just... I guess case studies, you know, there's a lot with teaching, you know, being able to see students that come in and learn about Reiki, just kind of seeing their lives turn around, whether or not they want to become a Reiki practitioner or they want to use it for themselves. That's really fantastic and amazing to witness. But when people come to see me to receive Reiki, oftentimes I'll see big change that happens. Sometimes it's very dramatic or very subtle over time. I had one young woman who came to me. She had extreme anxiety, and she had some abuse that had happened in her past. And she wasn't in a place to be able to even go to a counselor to talk about it. And so I worked with her for several months, and she would come in mostly every week. And, you know, she would feel very peaceful and very calm afterward. And one, like, you know, after maybe like 6 or 7 months, she stopped coming. And to me, that means that's good. That means some progress has been made. And I talked to her mother later, and I found out that she was able to start going to counseling, and she was able to go to talk therapy. And so to me, that's huge, because what Reiki does on a subtle level, it's working with the spirit and, you know, with all the levels of the body, that she was able to kind of peel back and heal some of those things that were maybe stopping her from being able to go to talk therapy.
It was too traumatic.
It was too traumatic. And so now she's able to do that. So to me, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if she had gone to talk therapy, it might have taken much, much longer.
Right, to get to the core, to get to the root of things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Tyler, you got a good one?
It's hard, because with Reiki, it takes time. It's because you are using someone else's built-in healing mechanisms. You're stimulating that. So it's really hard for them to be able to link that back to that Reiki session. But as a practitioner, it's wonderful seeing someone reach out to you or follow up, or you see them out in public and you could see their energy changed. They've made these better decisions. Sometimes I pick up on, oh, you haven't been gardening. You're not very grounded. And I'll suggest that to a client, and the next thing you know, they start gardening and they blossom. Someone else was for boxing. He was very physical, and I knew he needed to channel energy through his arms. And I got that follow-up that he actually went followed through with it, and it's been helping.
Great. So. Thank you, panel. Wonderful. Stay tuned for Sandra and peanut butter and jelly time. Go, Sandy.
Peanut butter, jelly time. Peanut butter, jelly time. Peanut butter, jelly time.